¿Qué puedo decir? Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. It doesn't hurt to try again. This is since Venerable Chitta Paulo's last Saturday. I thought maybe he wants to say something before he goes. But then he says no. Do I say yes? Huh?
I want to put the responsibility on me sometimes. Well, I can answer that question for myself. Bhima probably has different motivation.
That's right. There
he's
you
also
go.
Here, he's the man in charge here. It's also a different responsibility. So, I have to admit, I have a lot of freedom here in this place. I'm myself not a big group meditator. So I appreciate that very much, that I can do my own practice here, the same as I can do in Bodhinyana. And having that freedom feels free for me. That's for me what the monastic life is supposed to be, that you don't have these worldly obligations. And then you don't put all these other obligations on your shoulders. I have to be there at a certain time, I have to do this, I have to do that. And people get in the monastery, they get as busy and as determined and as tense as they get in the world. For me, a monastery is supposed to be a place where you can breathe freely. It just feels like, wow. It's like coming home. There's something there that is sort of attractive. It pulls oneself to that place. And luckily for me, I have a very beautiful experience here. I feel very attracted to the place, the way Kemavaro lets me at least deal with my monastic life, doesn't try to mingle with my practice. And the atmosphere I find very pleasant. It's obviously always what we ourselves put into a place. I try to keep my mind as wholesome as possible. So that is part of my practice. It doesn't always work, but if sort of a negative thought about somebody or some situation arises, I try to deal with that and try to contemplate that and try to figure out if that is wholesome for my own mind, if that is wholesome for anybody else, if I hold on to that sort of thought in my head. And I think I did pretty well. I don't have a feeling of I need to get away from somebody. I need to get away from this place. That I have the feeling that I can come back here. It feels like a good place for me to practice. And for me, that is always the highest praise that you can give a monastery. If you have the feeling that you don't feel at home at that place, then it's obviously not your place. Sometimes I have a feeling people interpret the Dhamma that if they feel uncomfortable somewhere, oh yes, I'm practicing right. If it hurts, oh, I'm practicing right. If it's difficult, I'm practicing right. Actually, I don't think so. The first, what keeps us? What keeps us with the Dhamma? What keeps us with the practice? In the long run, has to be some sort of love that we develop for it. There has to be something that is not just a spiritual ideal somewhere in the far on the horizon. Must develop into something that feels like a solid appreciation, a solid attraction to the practice, to the Dhamma, to the teaching, whatever, and whatever you make out of it. If it makes you more uncomfortable, if you get more miserable, if you get more grumpy, if you get more tense, that is not the path for me. That is not the path of the Buddha. I imagine the Buddha as somebody who figured out a way to get out of suffering. And he didn't say, actually, you have to suffer more to get out of suffering. Understand what makes us suffer. Understanding where is the tension. How does suffering arise in our mind? And obviously, the more sensitive we are, the more opinionated we are, the less kindness we have, the more we have to suffer. Because the world is not running according to our desires and wishes. So then taking then that whole blame business out of the mind. This beautiful aspect of non-self of the Buddha. Just in my meditation, just this, if there are still thoughts, just this, wow, if I had anything to say, it would be quiet, but it isn't. There are still thoughts in my mind. I'm having that beautiful attitude towards it. Whatever is happening there, it's not your business. You cannot do anything about it. It's just coming and going of thoughts. And then there seems to be somebody in the background who is watching that whole business. That's what I call this, our personal reality. Somebody who bites into that stuff or doesn't. And the kinder, the more compassionate, and more interested as well. The one who is more interested in what is really going on there instead of trying to manipulate what is going on there. Because that interest is a sort of kindness in itself. So if somebody takes an interest in you, it's always a very nice feeling. You have the feeling somebody is listening to you, really listening. I feel it's always appreciated and feels kind and feels nice. And instead of focusing on my breath or focusing on this or that, I try much more to develop that attitude in my mind that is willing to see and listen what's going on. And if there's interest there, then that kindness comes automatically with it, and then the meditation is no problem anymore. It's very pleasant. I wanted to sit here. I really did want to sit here. It was nice sitting here. And if the meditation doesn't become anything like that, if it's going to be a struggle and it's just some hope for future success somewhere always, you're going to manage it a few years, and then your energy is going to dissipate and you give up. Because even meditation was the same struggle as all the rest in your life. being so relaxed when you sit down and you have the feeling that you really want to do that, really love to do that in that moment. You can develop that attitude from the beginning in your meditation. It's a very different starting point. And so all the tension drops away, and it doesn't matter anymore what happens in the meditation, because that kindness and interest is there already. And it's just watching the journey wherever it goes. So I can just encourage you all to learn to deal with your mind in a way that you see that as something very precious. Looking after your mind in such a way that you, like, you really want to be treated. The kindest aspects of your character, whenever something comes up that is not so skillful, you did something wrong or somebody else did something wrong, it's just beautiful if the mind can remember that this positive attitude, this kind attitude, and knowing that there is some real refuge there. Because if you're not happy in your own mind, you will never be happy anywhere. And the place is good enough, like Ajahn Brahm loves to say. Good enough, good enough, good enough. Beautiful sala, a very harmonious atmosphere. We're getting supported here very lovingly with excellent food. And people are respectful and try their best to be kind. And nothing is perfect. And if we have these high ideals, how somebody should behave, or even how oneself should behave, we're putting ourselves in that vice already again. We're putting everybody else and ourselves in this, under this, in this pressure cooker, where it just becomes so uncomfortable again. And if we can throw all these ideals and all these incredible aspirations, just throw that out of the window from time to time. And just appreciate what you got already. So, because it might not get better. It's not externally, it will not get better. But when this internal universe, who each and every one of us lives in, changes into something more beautiful, then if the mind is developed enough, any place will be good enough after a while. I'm not there. I need the places still where I get support, and where also my comfort zone is not too far challenged. But hopefully I develop my mind in a way that any place will become more and more comfortable. So please look after your own minds. Put effort into that, into this goodwill of the mind. Yeah? I'm not talking about this nempy-pempy sort of, oh, I'm so spiritual and I love you all sort of mind state. That just is, when you do something, when you talk to somebody, when you think about something or somebody, there's an attitude behind that. Check that attitude. Is that a wholesome attitude? Is that going to lead to fruits in your practice? Is it going to lead to more calmness in your mind? Or is it going to lead to more agitation? Is there a possibility in that direction that it becomes more beautiful? Or is it such an unkind mind state already that nothing good can come of it? And to catch that from moment to moment, this attitude we have to live on day by day, minute by minute. Catching that and seeing clearly, wow, this is not good for me. That is not good for anybody else. And if the mind sees that, we don't have to force it. If the mind sees that is suffering, it's going to let go of it. And that's the beautiful part of the teaching. It has nothing to do with willpower. It's basically just seeing clearly. There cannot anything nice grow out of that. And if the mind sees that clearly in a moment where we're not agitated, it drops it. Don't have to decide, drop it, mind, drop it. It's so unwholesome. No. Seeing it's unwholesome, it's an automatic process that the mind drops it. It's only often we're just so blind, we hold on to that which is poisonous. Poisonous in our own minds. And often we do that in the meditation as well. And we're just pushing and shoving and wanting and getting more and more agitated. Getting really fed up. There's a moment-to-moment basis, even in the meditation, I can just come back and say, oh, it's okay, you're agitated. See how agitated you can get. And I'm talking about mind states here, I'm not talking about bodily pain. If you're in bodily pain, it's very difficult. Then please do some walking meditation. Or leave the meditation. Maybe it wasn't the right moment, actually. Maybe the mind is just not ready now to sit. Also give yourself, in my opinion, that freedom. You don't feel that there's a place I have to sit now at that time. That sort of constraint can poison the meditation from the very beginning. Make sure when you come here that you try to get a mind state, you set your mind up and say, oh, it's beautiful, I can sit together with other people who try to go in the same direction. If you have a mindset like that, the meditation is going to go smooth. If it's just sort of, oh, I have to be there again at that and that time, just have to put the hours in and then something is going to happen. No, never, 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 ever. Not in 20 or 30 or 40 years and not on... till your knees break. It's not gonna happen. It's not about the hours you sit. It's about each and every moment, your attitude in the mind. What sort of universe am I creating? And if there's a universe created that has a little bit of peace already, then you can sit in your meditation and it's got a sort of likes to listen what is going on when it's even more still. There's even less going on. There's even less that I have to do. And then it becomes interesting, and with this interest comes this kindness. And with this kindness that comes, the mind wants to stay there because it's beautiful there. There's nobody holding anything there. Just the mind stays because it's nice. The nicer it is when really some joy comes up, then it's just frozen there. Cannot even move anymore. Because we don't have a choice. The mind will always run away from suffering and will always go to where it's beautiful. At least where it perceives and thinks where it's beautiful. Never have a choice in the matter. And as long as the meditation is struggle, then the mind has got to look for a way out the whole time. If there's some beauty, then the mind has an ideal, where it's sort of a draw, where it can go, where it likes to go, and where it likes to stay. If that is not present, forget it. It's not going to happen. It might happen that some people, they sometimes manage, they push themselves so hard, and then because so the mind and the body and nothing knows where to go anymore, then sometimes they have a nice meditation. But what comes then? And comes the memory, oh, I have to push myself hard, then that and that happens. But it won't. It won't happen a second time. Because you have to push yourself to always to this brink again. And that's gonna get harder and harder and harder. But if you have a point of joy from the very beginning, point of happiness there, it's gonna draw the mind in. And this has so much more to do with letting go as well. Because the mind realizes the less I fiddle around, the more kind I am. And the more kind I am, the more beautiful the whole thing becomes. Because we love kindness. It's not just because we're the good Buddhists that we are so kind or whatnot. Kindness is just such a pleasant mind state. It's just so beautiful and attractive that the mind doesn't have a choice. It just gets drawn towards it. If you can create that in your own mind, that's what loving kindness meditation is for. If people are skilled with that, get in the right train of thought and develop some real feelings of loving kindness, that's how people can be drawn into beautiful meditations as well. Because it's just so lovely. It's just tears are welling up, and it's just unbelievable. Seems to be all for free and there the whole time. Where was it before? It's your own little universe, that possibility in each of our own little universe versus this beauty. But to get a taste for it and get an idea of it. That is done not by trying to achieve something in the future, that is done by looking after one's mind as good as we can from moment to moment and day by day. I'm seeing exactly what is not wholesome for my mind, what is not wholesome for other people. Becoming clear about that. Being clear of it, it will drop. All by itself. It's not self. It's just a process going on. Process looking constantly for happiness, trying to find happiness. Through the five senses. Through thoughts. Looking and looking and looking and never finding. And we know already as Buddhists in that five sense world that happiness we're looking for is not there. It's impossible. There are only opposites. We're always looking with a minus in ourselves. It's always tension there already that is looking outwards. And feel that in your meditations, and want to get up, want to see, want to hear, want to smell, want to do, want to taste, want to touch. Wanting is always this minus, this pull there already. And that has to be supplemented first with something beautiful. I shouldn't want. The Buddha said, I shouldn't want. No, you have to want. You don't have a choice. Being human having consciousness is wanting. But we can remember, in this five sense world, there's only a limited amount of happiness available, and it's gonna. The happiness that is available is always just making that minus into an equal sign. Basically, this wanting just gets knocked on the head, and that is how we identify pleasure. Hmm? Hungry, beautiful food. Yum, 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 pox, gone. Where is it? Where is the beauty? Where is the wanting? Gone. Knocked on the head. Until a few hours later it all starts again. So our whole experience is just of a mind that is hungry. So how do we make our minds a little bit less hungry? A little bit less hungry for the five senses. And that is, if the mind develops an appreciation of itself, if there is some beauty created in one's own mind, that makes it, at least from time to time, more attractive than going out into the five sense world and looking there. And that is just because I'm at ease in that mind. Starting to be at ease in that mind, being comfortable with oneself. Stop criticizing. It's just a process going on. If the mind sees that it's suffering, it's gonna let it go. Nobody has to judge that. It's completely unnecessary and unkind. Just, oh, okay, I did something stupid still. Because obviously the mind didn't see in that moment that there is suffering. It's pure suffering in that direction. Okay, now I see. It sucks. And it drops it. And it becomes a little bit less. Happens again. You realize it again, and it becomes a little bit less. And that is how these tendencies slowly become weaker. These unwholesome tendencies, our anger, our agitation, this wanting to achieve something again, either in the world or now here in the monastery, in the spiritual realm. Becoming more at ease, kind of. Just more aware of what is going on in the mind and what universes we create. So I got Kema off the hook. Did a whole Dhamma talk now. Thanks for listening.
Thank you very much, Ajahn Chittapala. Just some background. You may not know that Chittapala and I were novices. We had Panagarikas together. When I came to Wat Pananachat as a lay person, Chittapala by then was already an Anagarika and then ordained before going to Bodhinyana Monastery. Yeah. So we spent our formative years in Thailand. I love Thailand. I think Chittapala had a different experience when they're online. I still love Chittapala. And that's the thing. And the beauty of the Dhamma is, you know, we are very different in ways in our approach, but also certainly, but there's also a lot of similarities, obviously, in our intention and aspirations, you know, to be from suffering. And that's the beauty thing about the Dhamma is, you know, it just allows for so much. It's just the purity of intention. We all have our weaknesses and strength. And as long as we don't hold on to it, attach to it, and work with it, it becomes, you know, very beautiful things towards the end. And as you can't go wrong with kindness and gentleness. Can't go wrong with letting go. Yeah. So just It's a very beautiful Dhamma talk by Chanchita Paulo. And yes, no, it's great having you. Obviously, I mean, you're most welcome to come back. That's right. Okay. Yes. So with that, we'll say good night before we start crying. Okay.
Sadhu, sadhu.